Do you want us to keep producing the best VCU men's basketball podcast out there? If so, there's a way you can help. If you enjoy this show, please consider donating to help us pay for the cost of making it available. You can do so by using the PayPal link in the description of the podcast or on social media sites where we post it. Even a small donation would help. Thanks in advance, and go Rams! Welcome to Rams Rewind, a podcast that looks back at all of the action from VCU men's basketball. In this special in-season bonus episode, host George Templeton looks at the state of the program and interviews experts about all things VCU basketball. And now, here's George.
All right, folks, welcome to Rams Rewind, the tournament preview edition. Our guests fell through, so what we're going to do is do a little VCU by the numbers as we get into the tournament. We're going to talk a little bit of our tales from the non-conference and how our non-conference teams are doing in their tournaments. Some of them are doing very well. And then we're going to talk about the tournament and that side of the bracket and, of course, reference something you all will know very well if you've listened to this podcast before. First and foremost, before we start, if you like what you hear and you want to help us out, you can shoot us some dinero. There is a link to the PayPal in the description on Podbean and your other podcast platforms. And if you do, we'll shout you out like our good friend Bert Grant, who sent us a very nice donation this week. Bert, thank you so very much for doing that. We really appreciate it. Now, let's get right to it. Let's start with some tale with the VCU by the numbers here, because it's interesting to see what's happened in the wake. They just played one game last week against Dayton on the road, and because, you know, they played well and nearly won the game, they've actually moved up in just about everything. In KenPom, they had a huge drop the previous week after losing two games. They had dropped all the way to 92. They're all the way up to 84 in KenPom. They moved up eight spots by playing really well on the road at Dayton. That is mainly powered by a nice little jump in offensive efficiency, because, again, their offense was very good in that game. They jumped 16 spots there. But their slide defensively that we've talked about and that we're probably going to talk more about as we get on continues. They are down now. And remember, they were all the way up, I think, to 40th in defensive efficiency at one point. They're now down to 62nd. Again, start of the year, that would have been – I think we would have accepted that they were going to be that. I think we wouldn't have accepted 114th in offense. But 62 in defense, I think, is something we would have accepted, knowing that, you know, the defense was going to definitely fall back a little bit with the new coach and all that. What is also interesting, though, is that this is something that we've also pointed out, and the numbers bear it out. As their tempo has gotten quicker, and it's still not very quick, they're only 274th in tempo, but that's the biggest jump I've seen them have in a week. Their tempo went up 12 spots. As their tempo has gone up, their defensive efficiency has slid, because when they were at about 40th, they were barely in the top 300. So as they have played faster, they have struggled defensively. And that's something that Ryan Odom and his staff's got to look at as we get started. By the time you hear this, you will hopefully be warming up with this before the tournament, but you'll hopefully hear it. Maybe you'll hear it after they've played their first tournament game and hopefully won it. And that's something that Ryan Odom's got to look at. So they've had a decent week in terms of the KenPom numbers. Their non-conference strength and stretch schedule is basically holding at the very tail end of the top 200. I'm hoping that's going to go up if these non-conference teams do well. In terms of the net, they had a nice jump there too, because they had fell all the way to 80th in the net, and now they're 76. So they're just outside the quad one for those teams that won at the Siegel Center. They're just missing out on a quad one win there. And that's third best in the A-10. They have retaken that from St. Bonaventure, who, of course, has been on the slide themselves. Dayton is far and away number one. They're holding at 21. That's VCU's one quad one win. Richmond is 71, which means if VCU had managed to win at Richmond, they might have a quad one win there. Nine teams in the A-10 in the top 100. Which, again, you know, this has been a really good year for the A-10 in spite of the fact that it's a question of whether they're going to get two bids or not. St. Bonaventure's 82, Massachusetts 83, Loyola Chicago 84, George Mason 85, St. Joe's 97, Duquesne 98. And how interesting that you've got two top 100 teams are going to battle each other in the play-in that's going on today. So that tells you the strength of this league, and it also tells you that this could be a wild tournament because there are a lot of different teams that can make a case for themselves, and that's part of why I think VCU's got a chance, is that some of the big time teams could get knocked off here, and some of the teams that we struggle with could get knocked off here because they're facing some tough matchups in this first round. So, you know, VCU's schedule has done VCU's, you know, at least, I mean, that's the thing. I didn't want to engage that night in the immediate aftermath of that loss because, again, there were things on the defensive end that were so bad. But overall, what Dan Gay, Tanis, and others had said was true. It was a really good performance. They took a ranked team on the road, the team that, you know, even though they're not the number one seed, has been the best team in the A-10 most of this year, if not all year, and they went toe-to-toe with them. And VCU's one of the teams that Dayton doesn't like playing because we do match up well with them. And we got and you know, Zeb Jackson had a tremendous game, and we did a lot of really good things. It's just, unfortunately, we let ourselves down, in my opinion, with defensive mistakes. And again, the KenPom numbers bear that out. And I think, you know, to get back to where they need to go, they're going to have to play better defensively. But we'll get to that. We will get to that, I promise. So let us look. So I forgot to bring it up. Let us look at our non-conference because, you know, we talk about the details from the non-conference is one of the things. If you're not a member of the Good, the Mad, the Ugly group, you should be, because we do the details from the non-conference. And the reason we do that is we keep track of who VCU's played and how they're doing, because it can matter if you're on the bubble. Of course, we're not on the bubble, but it can matter if you get in the tournament, because that is something that the committee looks at, is who you've played, who you've beaten, that sort of thing. And, you know, we've had a halfway decent start, but of course the week coming up is the big week, because a huge glut of our teams have not even played their first tournament game yet. Let's start with the teams we have played that have finished or are done. The two Big South teams, Radford and Gardner-Webb. Radford looked like a pretty good team in non-conference play. Very disappointing season in conference play. They won their first tournament game as a 9 seed, but they lost a High Point after being up 18-4. They went out in the quarterfinals. Gardner-Webb struggled in non-conference play and then took off during conference play, got the 3 seed, had a chance against UNC Asheville, had a big chance. Took that game to overtime, had a big chance to win in regulation, didn't, lost in overtime. They didn't make a basket in overtime. So they were out in the semifinals of UNC Asheville. Longwood actually won that tournament. Then we have Samford. Second night we played them. They won the Southern Conference. They got a little bit of help in that they got to play East Tennessee State, and East Tennessee State was pretty pesky, but Samford is your first VCU non-conference opponent into the dance. They win the Southern Conference. They're going to be a live upset chance in round one. McNeese State, who they played on opening night, won their semifinal with Lamar fairly easily last night. So they're in the championship game. And I think that is against Nicholls State. And Nicholls State was surprisingly the preseason pick to win that conference. That's going to be a good game. That is, because we're recording Tuesday morning, that is tonight, if I'm not mistaken. And so McNeese State will be trying to be the second team that VCU's played to punch their ticket to the big dance. So that leaves everybody, and everybody else has not played. Their tournaments are coming up. So we've got Seattle, who VCU defeated. They are the 4th seed in the Western Athletic. They were up there. They were in the race for the 2 seed, but they had a couple tough losses down the stretch. Now, the Western Athletic unfortunately does what I can't stand, which is they do the double bye into the semifinals for the top 2 seeds. So Seattle has to play the winner of Utah Valley, California Baptist, and then they will play the number 1 seed Grand Canyon, who will have not played for a week. So in one sense, it may help Seattle that that's the case. Seattle has beaten Grand Canyon. They're one of the only teams in that league to do it. The problem the Red Hawks have is, while the one side of the bracket is non-Texas teams, Seattle, the rest of that, the other side of that bracket, everybody's from Texas for Seattle. And that's where the majority of their conference losses have come from. They have lost to, I think, every team in that league that's based in Texas. Tarleton State, Abilene Christian, Rio, they even lost to Rio Grande Valley, who's one of the worst teams in that league. UT Arlington, who's in the tournament. I mean, they really, really struggled. They beat Abilene Christian at home, but they lost at Abilene Christian when they played them on the road. They have had a tough time with these Texas teams. So we're going to see. They lost at Stephen F. Austin as well. So we're going to see what Seattle can do. If they can upset Grand Canyon, who knows? But they're going to have to face the Texas team in the title, and that's going to be a significant obstacle for them if they can somehow get by the number one seed. Then we talk about our folks in Orlando. Iowa State is the number two seed in the Big 12. They've been in the top 10 in the country. Let's not talk about how that game went because we've already spilled enough. We've spilled enough rhetorical blood on that, and it'll just make us all mad and frustrated. They'll get the Texas-Kansas State winner, and that will be a tough game. They just played Kansas State and lost to them. They would probably much rather see Texas. I'm hoping Kansas State will beat Texas because I'm hoping Texas will miss the tournament because it shouldn't make it. So, you know, they're a chance in that Big 12, but the Big 12's tough. Boise State in the Mountain West just missed out on a tie for the championship out there. They are the three seed. They will play either New Mexico or Air Force, likely New Mexico, even though Air Force actually upset them in the pit about 3 weeks ago. That'll be a huge game because Boise State's probably in for sure. New Mexico is probably one of the biggest bubble teams in the whole country. If they hadn't lost to Air Force, they would probably be a lot safer. But Boise State could knock New Mexico out of the NCAA tournament by winning that game. Then we have Penn State, who, you know, really struggled at times in the Big Ten, but I think did well to get 9-11. They just missed getting out of the pillow fight. They're going to play Michigan in round one. You'd expect Penn State to win that. Michigan is this is the worst Michigan basketball team in 57 years because they finished last. They finished last. They're the first Michigan basketball team to finish last in 57 years, and they're really terrible. And I would expect Penn State to win that. And I will say, I'd absolutely give Penn State a chance against Indiana. Indiana is another one of these bubble teams that probably has to win a couple games. I'd give Penn State a chance against Indiana, and I think I'd even give them a puncher's chance against Nebraska. They weren't bad against Nebraska on the road, so maybe we get a run out of Penn State in the Big Ten tournament. You never know. Again, they've got some of our players that won an Atlantic 10 tournament last year, so that's going to help them. Then we have Norfolk State, another number one seed that VCU's played. They won the Mideastern Athletic Conference outright. And it's a normal tournament, 1 versus 8. They get Coppin State, but what they do, because they have the women's tournament at the same time, if Norfolk State wins, they get a day off before they play the 4 or 5. Norfolk State's going to be heavily favored, but they've had a lot of tough games in that conference, so you don't be too sure. Howard, NC Central, Delaware State have all given Norfolk State really tough games. They lost to UMES, who's the 7th seed. So, you know, they're not a sure thing. But I really like them in this tournament, and Robert Jones has done an amazing job. Then we have Memphis, who at one point were top 10 in the country, and, you know, that looked like a real near miss. And then they just fell off the map, fell all the way to a 5 seed, which means they did not get the double bye into the quarterfinals. They will play the winner of Wichita State and Rice. You'd expect them to win that. And then they got the big game probably with South Florida. That'll be an interesting game. Memphis, South Florida 10, and Memphis's Hyde when they played them in the regular season. Then we come to the hottest team in VCU's non-conference schedule, and I bet you wouldn't have been saying that when VCU beat them fairly soundly in December. That is Alcorn State. Alcorn State, who at the time VCU played them, had one win, and it was not even non-D1 win. Alcorn State has won 9 straight games. So they have vaulted themselves from under 500 in the SWAC to the number 2 seed in that tournament. They will play Alabama A&M. I love the fact that the SWAC only takes 8 teams to their tournament. It also means that the even the 7 and 8 seeds are a live chance in that tournament. They've had eight seeds win that tournament recently. So Alcorn State's got to be on their P's and Q's, but they have played extraordinarily well. They have unbelievable momentum, the Braves, and they're a big chance, especially as Grambling has never won that tournament on the men's side and has never been to the NCAA tournament. And they felt the pressure last year and kind of crumbled in the final. Alcorn State, they got to get past that. They got to get past that first game. But again, like the MEAC, because they do their men's tournament with the women's tournament, if you're a one or a two seed and you win your game, you get a day off while your opponent plays the next day, and that can be a big help. Also in that American, I should have clumped them together with Memphis, but I forgot, and that's Temple. They're the 11 seed playing in the pillow fight against Texas San Antonio. Who knows what's going to go on there, given the scandal and the talk about, you know, match fixing and all this with Temple. And then Maryland Eastern Shore, I mentioned them because they did beat Norfolk State. They're in that 7 seed line. They went 4-10 in the MEAC, but they had a lot of close losses. They could have easily been 500 in the league. They play North Carolina Central. They'll be a big underdog, but even there, you know, UMES is the kind of team that could jump up and bite somebody. North Carolina Central better be on their P's and Q's, and you'd expect them to be. Their coach is a very good coach and has won that tournament a bunch of times. But you see the picture here. You know, this didn't look like much of a non-conference schedule at the start. You know, McNeese State would have been a big-time win. It would have been a quad two win, and you know, there's all the talk about whether Will Wade's going anywhere. I think he's staying because he's got a show cause penalty for one more year. And McNeese State has rampaged through that Southland. They're a team that can be in the Sweet 16. So we could end up, you know, three, maybe four, maybe even five teams getting automatic bids and punching their tickets to the tournament. And we know that Iowa State and Boise State are going to be in. So we're looking at least four of our non-conference opponents making it. So this schedule turned out really well. And again, if VCU had turned some of these L's that they had into W's and had done a little better in conference play, this schedule would be a major assist towards getting them into the tournament as an at-large. But if they can win this tournament, it may be a major assist at getting them a better seed than they otherwise would have. Certainly their non-conference didn't help them like this one would have last year. So let's talk about VCU and this tournament and this side of the bracket. VCU, like 2015, starts with Fordham. And I reference 2015 because, you know, we're all frustrated with how they've played down the stretch. You know, they had the bye in their hands and managed to lose three straight and four, you know, and four of their last six. After winning 9 of 10. And I will say, if they had a guest on, I would talk about the confounding nature of this team, because it is confounding. They started the year a pretty good defensive team, struggled against McNeese State, but then, you know, they were a pretty good defensive team. And down in Orlando, which I got to see live, they showed that they were a really good defensive team. You know, doing what they did against Iowa State, holding them without a basket for 11 minutes, holding Boise to 65 in a game that they probably should have won. And then their defense fell off the map. You know, they had a four-game stretch that was crowned by the St. Bonaventure and George Washington losses, where, at least according to KenPom, they were one of the worst teams in the country defensively. And then they win 9 of their next 10, playing some of the best defense in the country. So, and then, of course, after that, or excuse me, 9 of their next 11 is what they did, I think. No, 9 of their next 10. And then starting with that UMass game, well, really starting with the St. Louis game that they won, they've slid defensively, and we just pointed that out earlier. So which team is it? And again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. As this team has played faster, their defense has got worse. So for me, tempo is going to be a key thing for this tournament run to be successful. They have to play at a slower tempo. They have to limit the possessions, because they can be a really good half-court defense when they apply themselves, but they're not doing it. And they're certainly not doing it in these up-and-down, wham-bang, crazy games. And look, you know, I think people made a lot of excuses about the 13 shots in a row against Richmond. Well, what do you say after the last two games? What do you say after having a game where you let Day-Day Grant – you continually leave Day-Day Grant open, and he gets 26 points and you lose by 10 at home. And you can sit here and say, well, so it's, you know, we didn't have Shulga, this and that and the other. That was a winnable game. It was a 4-point game at halftime. You could have easily turned that game around. And, you know, defensively, you weren't too bad. The problem was you let Day-Day Grant get loose. And he's an outstanding player, and he was 8 of 17. The rest of the team was 16 for 40. So that's kind of a big deal. And I think that kind of informs what happened at the Robins Center. Then you get to Dayton, and it's the same thing. Dayton burns the Nets up after halftime. VCU was good in the first half in that game. You know, excuse me. Dayton didn't shoot the lights out in the first half, and VCU did a good job, had the 7-point lead at halftime, even though they it was as high as 17. You had to be happy, or I was at the half, with where VCU was at. I certainly felt good about their situation. You know, Dayton's, you know, 3 for 8 at halftime, which is not awful, but it's not great either. And they're under 50% in the first half. And again, I'm pretty comfortable that if it stays where it's at, VCU's going to win the game. You know, they shoot 9 of 14 after halftime. 7 of 11 in the second half and 2 of 3 in overtime. Their shot selections was really good. And that's why they shot doggone 20 of 34 in the second half. You know, which is almost 60%. So this defense has fell off. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is they need to use their depth. It's not quite as critical as it would have been in 2015, because there they had to play 4 games in 4 days to win. That's not the case. It's really they're playing two game mini tournaments. This first one where they got to play Fordham and then Massachusetts. They get the day off, and then they play whoever they're going to play in the semifinals and finals, and we'll get to that. But for me, they're going to have to use their depth, because that is the thing that's helped their defense as well, has been wearing down the opponent. And let's go to that Massachusetts game. Let's go there, because that is who they're going to play if they get by Fordham. Now, they got jumped at the start. They were not prepared to play. Ryan Odom needed to use his timeouts to try to stop it. He didn't. And Cross and Cohen ate them up. And both of them made all 4 of their threes. And they're not the most noted 3-point shooters. Their one really good 3-point shooter was 2 for 6, Diggins. And they got to cover him if they get to the Massachusetts game. You know, Diggins is the one you got to go over the screen on. But Cohen and Cross were a problem. They were very big, and they kind of pushed everybody around. So I'm going to say this. This was the game Rose Wheeler got some time in, and he played well. Use Rose Wheeler in this game. Use him. Yes, he gives you a few more fouls against Cohen and Cross if you need it. But more importantly, he gives you some size in there so that Cohen and Cross just doesn't push them around. And he's somebody that can fight through some of these darn screens. And so that those guys don't get open, and then hopefully Diggins doesn't get open either. And that's the other thing. Defensively, everybody will have seen it on tape. This team has struggled with just getting around a screen, going over the screen, sometimes going under the screen mistakenly, and teams are going to keep doing it. So you've got to be playing physically on defense. And look, that may mean taking a few fouls because you go through a screen too hard. I don't care. If you got to do it, you got to do it. Here's the other thing. Force the ref to look at these screens and say, oh, you know what? They're not set. It's a moving screen. Force them to make that call. And you can't do that if you don't physically engage with the screener. VCU, to do well in this tournament, has got to defeat these screens out front. And yes, That may mean getting hurt on the pick and roll, and that's going to be a problem against Massachusetts because they got two guys who run it really well, Cross and Cohen. But you're going to have to live with some consequences, and that might have to be one of them. And look, what did we see in the last game against Dayton? Dayton missed a bunch of shots near to the basket. Why? Because VCU just had bodies that were there and in the way. They didn't block the shot. They didn't necessarily make a great defensive play or whatever. They were just there, and it was enough to get them to miss, at least when doggone the refs weren't calling ticky-tack fouls. So, you know, you fight these picks. You fight through these picks, and then you rotate on these pick and rolls, and, you know, we'll see what happens. That's what they have to do, but they cannot get burned from three like they've been getting burned from three fairly regularly in these games. It just can't happen. It just cannot happen. And look, they have fought through some adversity. We know about the injuries and the Bamisil situation and all that. I listened to Ryan Odom's press conference last night. It sounds like everybody's healthy. And this three-game losing streak is tough, but let's go back to 2015. 2015, in the last day of January, Breonna Weber tears his ACL. VCU's huge winning streak circles the drain against the stinking no-good Spiders. They hadn't lost since early December to UVA. They had won 12 straight games, including their first 6 in the conference. So they were 6-0 in the league, and they were rolling. Breonna Weber tears his ACL, our mascot, our totem, our havoc spirit animal, and they lose to Richmond. And I am going to use a word that may seem hyperbolic to you, but I remember what it was like at the time. That was traumatic. That was traumatic for the fans. It was traumatic for the basketball team. And you know what? VCU kind of spun their wheels like because of that the rest of the season. They were 5-5 after that. You understand? They were 5-5 after that. Actually, 6-5, I think. You know, they – and two of those wins were against bottom-feeding George Mason. Actually, three of the wins were against bottom-feeding George Mason, who lost to Fordham in that play-in game. And St. Louis, who finished dead last when they fell off the map in Jim Cruz's second year. So they struggled down the stretch of the season after Breonna Weber got hurt. You know, they lost to Richmond again in a tight game. They lost at home to Dayton. And, of course, the capper on all this was going down to the Belk Arena playing Davidson, and Davidson caned them for 40 minutes. 82-55. That was 1 week before they played Fordham in the second round of the A-10 tournament. They did get a little well against Mason in the season finale. But that was a tough time. Losing Breonna Weber, the team really struggled with it. I think emotionally it was a drain on them. And just seeing him, you know, I mean, he was about to break the steals record. And legitimately break it, not five years at Richmond, like what's-his-face, Gilliard. He was going to legitimately break John Linehan's record. He was, I think, either 10 or 11 away or whatever it was. And that was a hard thing for this team to get over. It was a hard thing for everybody to get over. You know, they lost at home to LaSalle after that. They lost at home to Dayton after that. So it was tough, but that team gathered itself. And here's the other thing. They didn't even play well in the first game against Fordham. They only won by 6. They had to grind that out. And they had to grind it out against Richmond before they rolled Davidson in the semifinal and then beat Dayton. So look, even if VCU struggles to win today, if they beat Fordham, with that day off on Friday, just get through. Find a way to get through. And I think they can do it. I think they can overturn that UMass loss the way they overturned the Davidson loss. They went from – I mean, this is the thing that will always blow my mind. March 5th, they lose to Davidson by 27. 9 days later, they beat Davidson by 20, and they crushed them and set records in the eight for their A-10 – their time in the A-10 for things like points scored and three-pointers made and things like that. They absolutely rolled Davidson right out of the Barclays Center. It was fantastic. So I do think they can overturn what happened to them at UMass. And then, who knows? That 8-9 for Richmond is St. Joe's and George Mason. George Mason just walloped Richmond up in Fairfax. And St. Joe's has the firepower to stay with anybody. I'm telling you that now. And I think Richmond can be upset. Now, that is not to say that's an easy, becomes an easy game for VCU if they get there, because St. Joe's almost came back against VCU in the second half with Eric Reynolds going ham on us. And we all remember the George Mason game as the rock fight where Barack Okojie, who is now grown into being an all-rookie team, all-rookie player for George Mason, slipped and fell and turned it over at the key point, and VCU ended up surviving with a great defensive effort after two of their worst defensive efforts of the season previously to get on the board in the A-10 this year. But I do think that could happen. I think we could be playing St. Joe's or George Mason in the semifinal, and I'd give us a good chance in both games. And then you get in the final, and who knows? Now, personally, I did the A-10 talk bracket prediction game, and I, of course, had VCU win in the tournament, and I had Dayton in the final. But again, you are set up for some potential lunacy in this tournament. The pillow fight teams, especially the ones that advanced, are tougher than your typical pillow fight teams. I don't really expect St. Louis to beat Duquesne, but Duquesne's A-10 tournament record is terrible. And they have to fight that. They have to fight that because they'll know that. Everybody will remind them of how rare wins for Duquesne are in the conference tournament. LaSalle has beaten St. Bonaventure. Which St. Bonaventure are you going to get? Who the hell knows? So, and LaSalle has, you know, had a good run in this tournament last year, almost pulled an upset to get to the semifinals. And they're playing well with Brantley and Brickus. They got the guards to cause you problems and Deshaun Shepard. So they're a bit of a nastier little 10 seed than you're used to in one of these tournaments. And it's been, the conference tournaments so far have been utterly and completely chaotic. You only have had, I think, three number one seeds win. Actually, four, because St. Mary's won last night. Out of all the auto bids, you've had one seeds losing their conference opener all over the place this season. So it's just been kind of naturally nuts. And what would be nuttier than a VCU team missing out on a double bye that looked to be theirs for weeks, then turning around and winning four games in 5 days from the five hole, just as they did in 2015. Yes, it can happen. It starts with Fordham. And look, if this game's a slowdown game, it's going to be played on Fordham's terms. But I think, as I've said, VCU's a better defensive team when they slow the tempo down. So we'll see how they approach it today at 2 p.m. That's about 4-5 hours from now. And, we hope you liked this and we hope you enjoyed it. We're sorry that we didn't get you a guest. We efforted and efforted and efforted and could not come up with one. But we hope you like what you heard today. Give this a listen before the tournament. And if they win Wednesday and you haven't listened to it, give it a listen before the Thursday game, because I think we break the UMass game down very well. Thank you all for listening. See you with some, hopefully, several recaps after these games. The first one will not be live as I will be working today. Hopefully, if they win and I got the day off tomorrow, we will have a live recap, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and a quick podcast put out for you folks in podcast land. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you later.
To submit a question for George to answer in an upcoming episode or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities for this podcast, please email ramsrewind@gmail.com. We'll be back after the next game, and thanks for listening to this episode of Rams Rewind.